Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and some things about, in special tonight, about consciousness. And I thought it'd be interesting to do a show on restoring consciousness from the light of the soul. Now, I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. But I think that tonight's show is probably relevant to just about everybody who's listening, because most people, regardless of their dedication to living a more spiritual life and their interest in all the subjects we talk about on the show, spend some, if not most, majority of their life destroying their consciousness from various activities rather than building it and growing it to the point where they have more contact than they had, say, in prior lives and especially earlier in this life with their soul. Now, you might say, well, how come? I mean, if you did really good at the end of the last life, why don't you just pick up and start right over there, right where you left off? I mean, that would make sense, especially since there's inner plane life, in which you spend a lot of time dealing with the illusions in the bodies that remain after physical death. Those bodies, for all intents and purposes, are the astral and the monastic or mental bodies. But here is the rub, as they say. When we live out a physical life, it is the karma from that lifetime, and therefore the genes, the spiritual genes, which match to at least 50% the physical genes we're going to have in our next lifetime, are unfortunately related to specifically the physical events in that life. Because energy is what causes the changes in the body's senses, which then diminishes consciousness over time. So ultimately, what we're really saying here, what I'm saying, is that restoring consciousness involves the damages we do while we're physically alive for the physical body. And you can't do much to change that while you're alive, either in the astral or mental worlds. Some people don't believe that or don't understand it, one of the two. And because of that, they think, well, I'll just work it all out once I'm dead, so I'll live selfishly here and then go on and become a more spiritual person in the astral world, where it is many times easier to do so. But the problem is, just when you thought you had the right combination for leading the right kind of spiritual life in your ideas, it just ain't so. And you might want to go back in time a few weeks ago to learning about what's wrong with trying to get something for nothing. You don't end up exactly getting what you bargained for, and you usually get a lot of problems. So you can't cheat the system by some kind of, we'll call it, mental gyrations in figuring out, well, if I do this and that later, I'll get by. Well, that isn't how it works, and that's the reason when we come back, two things happen. First of all, you only have memory of past life events if the continuity of your consciousness during the series of activities that you're trying to remember and relate your thought and actions to were spiritually, we'll say, followed. You tried to create more light in your life than that of others, and you lived in the light of your soul. 60% is a big deal. And 60%, why 60%? Well, in order to have continuity of consciousness in general, and what people sometimes refer to as just plain old memory, which is not the same thing, but at least it has some bearing in terms of measurements, you need about 60% in continuity. This is based upon scientific experiments by psychologists. Now, they aren't necessarily interested in the spiritual issues that we are, but the point is that it applies to either side. if you don't have your senses working spiritually or otherwise, 60% of the time, you won't have memory. And so, and as an example, they have done experiments where people are shown a story. Let's say I tell you all a story. And in the story, I eliminate more than 40% of the events in the story, and then test you a week later to see how much you remember of the story. Well, if it's more than 40%, you remember nothing. That's right. You can't integrate the story enough so that the brain, which actually is a big storage device, is able to connect together the dots for most people. It is true that people with unusually high intelligence can sometimes go a little bit past that number. And some people who are savants and other kinds can sometimes do considerably better. But those kinds of memories are for mundane issues. When you deal with the more, we'll say, esoteric side of things, it gets even more complicated and even more difficult to maintain memory for an entire lifetime. Remember, that lifetime has an interspersion of much greater number of years while the person lived in the astral and mental worlds before rejoining their soul for a period of time in the higher mental world and then reincarnating. That could be hundreds of years. In that period of time, trying to remember something where over 40% of the quote-unquote series of events that made up whatever we're talking about of the memory are gone, forget it. That's exactly what happens. You forget it. The reason you don't know about your last life is because you didn't leave enough light to bring light into your mind. And an unenlightened mind loses its past. All right. But consciousness never dies. We've heard that so many times. So, obviously, you want to increase your consciousness so this effect goes away. The illusion that comes from being selfish, self-focused, is significantly reduced by consciousness, because consciousness is another way of saying soul love, or the light of the soul. And if you have that, then you're doing things that are spiritually of service. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's define that kind of thing. Spiritual service is service to others that helps them to be of more service themselves to others. Got it? You serve others so they can spiritually serve still other people. That's the light of the soul. That's the spiritual service. That's the way that we can restore consciousness in a person who has lived a life of selfishness. Now, here are some of the conditions that cause most people to fall away from the spiritual path and many people to never reach it in a particular lifetime. One of the first things that happens to us is that our personality doesn't let go. It is over-controlling. And why is that? I mean, the personality was supposedly created, right, by us as a soul, so that we could live in this world of, we'll say, tremendous forces because of the high density of energy. And forces are caused by one energy not moving smoothly with another energy because, again, there's so many things and people that are working in ways that are not in light. When that takes place, you get all this force. Some people in physics might refer to it as a form of heat. The result is that it causes the senses to diminish, and a diminished sense means you get less accurate information, and that causes consciousness to fall. Consciousness is the ability to take knowledge that comes from information and apply it in new circumstances. It allows us to be mentally creative and even astrally and physically creative. It allows us to create things beyond our present levels, we'll say, of knowledge. And that's a big part of what it means to exist, to be alive. So if we remove that, the meaning of life is almost inversely proportional to the amount of consciousness we either grow or lose in a lifetime. Less consciousness means less meaning, and less meaning means a boring, at best, or a very highly suffering life. Now, okay, so when our senses start to diminish and we start to suffer, people do all kinds of goofy things. The goofy things seem, at the time, to diminish or ameliorate the effects of losing some consciousness because we have a declining sense or senses. So we think, oh, gee, I'll just do something to feel better. I'll have a couple of hits of tequila. That'll make me feel better. Or maybe there's a drug of choice beyond that that I like a lot. And that cuts down the suffering that is the result, to begin with, of the diminished sense, which diminished consciousness. It is the recognition or awareness at some level, some sense, of loss of consciousness that causes people to suffer the most. And that's the weird thing about it, that we try to escape the suffering from losing consciousness, oftentimes by using goofy behaviors. I call them goofy because they don't make any sense, but they do less, apparently, to, amazingly, lower our consciousness further of the suffering so that we temporarily don't sense the suffering. Oh, that's a good one. So we'll lower our awareness of our suffering, which is what of our loss of consciousness, which leads to suffering, so that we suffer less temporarily, but guess what? Eventually, the behavior wears off, either because of repetition, such as people who may have some sexual addiction and they do something like that, and then they just wear that out. You know, oh, I'm tired. Well, then when you get to that point, suddenly you start recognizing the selfish behavior of your actions. I'm talking about not loving sexuality. I'm talking about the kind that's very self-focused. And the results can be extreme, you know, loss of sense, and then you suffer more. Well, I'll do something else. I think I'll take some drug. There's got to be a drug I can take, right? That'll make me feel better. Yeah, maybe for a couple hours or so. But eventually that wears off. And so you can see, you know, what any behavior will either cause a sense of, we'll call it diminished sense over time because of repetition or destruction of the sense from effects of behavior itself, or in some cases diminishes of the body and senses because of poisons from whatever we're doing, or you get into other aspects of the problem because we also cut off communication that may be important towards both spiritual development and even just communication with others. So the results are a mess, and all of this leads to a loss of consciousness. Yet people do these goofy things, I mean, all the time. It is so rare to find people doing the right thing that most of what I'm telling this evening, I think a lot of people would say, well, that's the norm. Hell, if you had a bad day, you go out and get drunk, right? Well, but, you know, I mean, or let's go have some meaningless sex. How about we do something really dangerous, like, you know, how about driving twice the speed limit and see what that feels like? There's lots of things that people can do to try to reduce these kinds of sufferings that have to do with, unfortunately, diminished sense in the first place or illusion. So, and by the way, you can't avoid suffering, and I'll explain right now. When we have a system like we are presently in, we are the density of energy in the physical world is really just overwhelming. No matter how, we'll call it disciplined, spiritually disciplined somebody is, and no matter how unbelievably serving they are to others, because we live as a unit, there isn't such a thing as just only individual consciousness. There's also group consciousness. The two have to be balanced. And so we have to be, unfortunately, somewhat responsible for others while we're acting individually responsible for ourselves. Some of that responsibility is to make sure they become more responsible, but it doesn't matter. We pay for the irresponsibility of others, especially while we live in the physical world. That's sometimes referred to as group, national, and even world karma. And you cannot escape it. Even the members of the next kingdom, they're not human beings anymore, okay? They're called the kingdom of souls. Those beings, we sometimes refer to them as masters or masters of the ageless wisdom, as long as they are present in the physical world and using a censure, because by the use of a censure, taking some energy from this world, no matter what, how you're serving, you have to take energy in order to sense. And the results are that they get karma from it, not because they themselves are selfish, but because those they serve are. And it's just hard to imagine, but if you read some of the older texts about the masters in the past and a bunch of other books like that, you find out that these masters back in those days would be physically present for some needed reason and pay dearly and suffer as a result of their service. Even more advanced humans, or especially more advanced humans, this is especially true. The songs of Milarepa, read that, or two, there's volumes one and two. They're not really songs, they're sort of like poetic stories. Explain how this, he was an arhat. How an arhat of his day. Today he would be called a third level initiate, but at the time he was that far advanced in relationship to others. And he was suffered immensely for others. For a while, he didn't care for the others that he suffered so much for. And because of that, his teacher told him, well, now you got to go and serve them more. Instead of being around me, I want you to go spend a lot more time with them so that you can get over this problem you have about not wanting to serve people that cause you to suffer. And he spent most of that particular lifetime in the area of China serving people who had not only no clue who or what he was, but many times were hostile or abused him or just, you know. And for a few years, he even became a hermit in a cave just to get away from people when they would come to visit him. They wouldn't bring him clothes and stuff because he was virtually naked living in 20 degrees below zero and stuff. He didn't want them to come and help him because he knew that he would suffer more. But finally he said, oh, you know what? This suffering thing, I got to get through it. So I'm going to go serve people in all the towns outside of here. And I'll go get them. They're going to wreck my bodies and they'll destroy my senses and I'll have to suffer from that. But you know what? He found how to restore his consciousness because he found the light of the soul while in that cave, actually. And then he went and came back, and he said, doesn't matter how much I suffer. It matters how much I serve others. My suffering is an irrelevant issue to how much I can serve others. And even when I can't serve others, cannot, because they won't let me, my understanding or consciousness grows in trying to find new ways to be of service, since the ways that I've been using aren't working. And so, it's an amazing story. Read it. Milarepa, about 1,000 years ago. So, looking at this whole thing and trying to figure out how to restore consciousness, this is probably a big deal because it's plagued many spiritually inclined people, whether they're disciplined or otherwise spiritually, for ages. This is not a small like, oh, Jay, yeah, I'll take a course on it, and 2 weeks later I'll be great at it. Now, you might take a few dozen lifetimes in it, and after a while, you might get it. Maybe tonight's show will help some people. I hope it does, because this is a very, very difficult area for people to get through. Okay, so what do I mean specifically? What is the light of the soul? Well, as I already explained, it's service to others so that they can be better servers. But the light of the soul is something even more tangible than that concept. The light of the soul allows us to endure the sacrifices in our, we'll say, service that causes suffering. It's only through that light that people can get over the hump and restore consciousness past a certain point. And I'm going to actually tell you what that point is. That point is just after people take, or soon after they take, the second initiation. Now, I'm going to be kind of specific here because there's so many people that are in this quandary, they don't really have a grasp on everything I'm explaining. And I better explain it well enough so that they can have a better grasp, or else I'm not probably doing my job tonight. But during the first level of initiation, the level of suffering is mostly about mundane issues. What am I talking about? Well, I'm saying that a person suffers because they lose the ability during part of the time that they're trying to be a service to others to do certain things that are of mundane, not spiritual abilities, such as, let's say, they're going to not be as good at swinging a baseball bat, or maybe they won't be the world's greatest clarinet player, or maybe they're going to suddenly lose some other of a sense that has led them in the past to both have enjoyment and to be of some, we'll say, some service to others by encouraging those others to take on certain physical activities to be, we'll say, improved not only in their mundane senses, but a little bit in their spiritual as well. Joining the two is okay. And this is maybe 10% of the time of their life. That's the first level of initiation. And for most people, they can suffer and recover without having much of the light of the soul, a good deal of what I'm saying. So during their service, usually within a group service type of group, they may spend a year or two doing things that sacrifice some of their sense. They may have some suffering as a result. They may suffer some losses in their wealth because they give some of their money to others, and especially the groups that they're associated with, to do the things that they have a strong inclination to want to improve in the world and help others to do the same. Those are all good things. There's nothing wrong with them. But it's mostly, maybe 90% of it is involves the mundane senses and mundane levels of what we'll call consciousness. Now, that's great, but when people go on to the next level of initiation, they're focused more in their astral body. They have to bring the physical body up to that level as well. So it starts compounding the overall experiences they have. But they can get to levels very quickly that diminishes their senses by 25% or so. Now, when you get to that point, you're not only losing mundane sense, now you start having trouble about sensing God. And this is just after you sort of get into the swing of being a second-level initiate to find a group, you start serving there. And during the accepting stage of being a soul and seeing souls, usually even the leader of that group, even more often the teacher, if there is one, of that group, you end up with some kinds of very strange effects because, yes, they'll give up some money, 25% of their money, which, you know, that's still a lot, and they'll give up all kinds of time, 25% of their time, as a matter of fact. But then they have this problem. They've got to give up 25% of their self, their lower self. Uh-oh. Giving up 25% of your lower self compared to less than 10%, big deal. The person now goes, whoa, wait a second. That self is myself. That self is the conscious part of me. I'm subconscious. It's conscious. I need it around. 25% really starts cutting into who I am. And the person only says, I'm going to rebel against this. There's no way. You're taking away 25% of who I am. I mean, that little bit I gave up before when I was just the first level boom plug, I didn't care. Didn't bother me. 25%, it starts hurting a lot. And the only way you can get that 25% back is to get the light of the soul, which gives you nothing on a personal level, so you still don't make your personality happy. It makes you more of the soul. The person has to join with or fuse with the soul to get past that point, and many people don't. They never get to what is called the pledge stage. They just kind of blow up. I'm not going to suffer like this. Forget it. And that's when people fail in that particular initiation more often than not, because they can't take it. What can't they take? They can't take substituting the light of the soul for their lower self. It's the higher self that they need to become. But that higher self requires that the personality becomes integrally identified with the soul. The personality has to say, I am the soul am I, you've heard that saying, from the poem, The Light of the Soul. And so you end up with this kind of incredible contest going on, you might say. Part of the person wants to be a soul, wants to live as a soul, wants to really, be the creator in miniature with God. That part is in joy when it sees and experiences God by being of service while it's in the light of the soul. But then, 75% of the time, it isn't doing that. And at 75% of the time, the personality is struggling, fighting, kicking, screaming. What about me? What about me? I want you to take care about me. And me isn't here anymore. Well, because it's so far from being a soul at that point, it just can't grasp itself making that change. And you end up with a rebellious personality. Maybe a personality disorder or two. Who knows? There's all kinds. And, it can go out drinking, gambling, doing almost anything. Maybe homosexuality for a while. Maybe this or that. It doesn't matter. Because those are the diversions. The diversions of the truth. The truth is that it is seeking. It is seeking a way to be what it used to be, a selfish or lower self, a self that only gives as long as something is coming back to it. Oh, it's willing to give. It's willing to give to children, its own children. It's willing to give to friends, neighbors, members of the church, members of the group it's in, fellow friends, but what's in it for me is always in the background. What am I going to get? I don't mind giving as long as I get some. That seems fair. And after all, these days, at least in this country, fairness is the big deal. So let's make it fair. Well, there's the quandary. And it's only when the person in total with its lower self says, I don't care how much lower self I lose, as long as I can be more of my soul. That's all that matters. How do you get there? Well, that's what tonight's show is about. That's what restoring consciousness is really about. It's that issue. That's why we spent all the last 30 minutes getting here. It's that issue which is the controlling factor. Now, some people say, well, why can't you just will it? You know, I will myself. I will it. Well, will works for human beings for somewhere between 12 and 24 hours. Some people, it's more than 12 to 24 minutes. But it doesn't work on a consistent basis. Why doesn't it? Will is just consistency of choice. Why can't you just keep choosing? I choose to do it. I choose to do it. I choose to do it. Because that's the first part of God's mind, and you're exercising creativity and freedom, and that's a wonderful thing. However, God made us in its own image, and God decided from his own existence that just its will alone is not sufficient. It also has to build its consciousness at the same time, or restore consciousness, as we're talking about tonight's show, which is the second part of its mind. The direction of that will needs to grow more and more, not just stay the same. So just willing something is not going to do it for you. You've got to will something and create something that gives direction in an increasing amount in every instance of willing something. So each time you make the choice of will, which is consistency in your choice, the consistency has to increase the definitiveness of the direction that you're moving in your thinking, and eventually in your actions. So in other words, each time, I'm going to put this in plain English. In other words, each time that a person says, I'm going to do something, they have to follow through with it in a way which is more complex, more meaningful, more helpful to others in all the issues that they're involved in. So their behavior, as well as their thought, has to be growing towards being more and more of service to others. If it doesn't work out that way, no matter how much you will yourself, the results don't work. Let me give you another example. Someone says, a gal says, oh, gee, that's not a problem. I know how to do this. Every day I'll go and work in the homeless shelter, and I'll give out food, and I'll help people find clothing, and make sure they're away from the elements when it's hot or cold, and I'll do that every day, and I'll do it for a full hour, and I'll be super consistent, and my will not bend. What's wrong with that problem? What's wrong with that? Well, we have the will not bending, but we don't have an increase in the service, do we? We don't have an increase in the direction or love of the person. They're just doing the same thing every day, right? Well, they're doing it consistently, though. That's good. Consistency is half of the ballgame. But consistency doesn't end up with creation. It ends up with redundancy and creation declining, and a decline in consciousness. How in the heck could that happen? So on the third day, our gal goes there and says, yeah, well, the last 2 days I was here for an hour. Today, 50 minutes will be okay. And you know what? Instead of just trying to find everybody some better shelter, I'll do it with half the people today. It's okay. I'll make up for it tomorrow. Consciousness declines. The person ends up going in the wrong direction, and yet their will is there, right? They're consistent in their choices. It's as consistent as you might be, but you could say, well, aren't they choosing to lessen it from your scenario? Maybe. But there are scenarios where I can make it so they never change, and still their consciousness falls. Evil does that. So you've got to stay within the definition I'm describing in order for the system to work. What is that definition? Well, every day you'd have to increase what you're doing. Become better in the service. Maybe grow it into new and completely different kinds of areas. Maybe take more responsibility than just going to some shelter. Maybe make your own. Maybe find people who are in need of shelter to help them make their own. Help them to become more individual and independent. This is the scenario. These are the scenarios that lead to restoring consciousness. Consciousness requires a balance between the direction that our choices are and the consistency of our choices as well. We need to balance those two. If you're highly consistent, but you don't build direction, or if you're inconsistent and you have great direction, you fail on one side or the other. How often is the failure? About 75% for people in the second initiation, and that is huge. And that's on a good day. And that's people who reach the pledged stage, not people who are just at that crazy stage where, well, I'm not sure if God's really out there. Because after all, I'm suffering so much. That's the problem. Those folks could be failing a lot more. They can fail so much they can get into drugs, they can get into any kind of, we'll say, selfish, self-focused activities. And that will just be a mess up. A terrible one. Now, of course, don't think that I'm going to just leave you here, because the rest of the show is about restoring consciousness, right? We're going to get there. We're going to talk about all the things that you can do. I'm just trying to bring you to the point of understanding why this is such a problem. This is no simple solution, like, oh, gee, I'll just go ahead and do, you know, four exercises. I bought this book. It tells me to do these 10 things, and I'll be fine. Yeah, sure. Remember that restoring consciousness is going to require creativity. And that creativity is going to require that it be some sort of spiritual service that helps others to become more spiritually serving themselves. That's the rule. With that in mind, I hope that this has made some, well, difference from maybe where we even started just 38 minutes ago. All right, so if we're going to continue with tonight's show, then, in this, we'll say, pragmatic manner of looking into restoring consciousness, then we need to be going into many, many specifics in many different areas of life, and that's exactly what I intend to do as much as I can within the time remaining. So hang in there. Don't get discouraged. Everybody screws this whole thing up. Multiple times. So, I mean, you're sitting there and say, well, I guess this is bad or worse than everybody. Well, everybody is in the same boat. This is the crux of the problem in physical existence, and it isn't that easy in the astral world either. Granted, when you get to the monastic, people are more successful, and we'll talk about that too. All right, so we are going to be coming back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about restoring consciousness from the light of the soul. Now, it is possible for some folks who are not necessarily on the spiritual path to restore consciousness without using the light of the soul. Then, in those cases, they can restore some of their lower self. Now, you might say, well, what's wrong with that? There's really nothing wrong with that. If you can have a stronger self in a lower sense, that's better than having less of a self where you can develop a disorder of your personality and all kinds of other problems. So certainly that's not a bad thing. However, let me explain this. Once you operate from a spiritual, we'll say, perspective, and you have functioned within the light of the soul for, we'll say, more than a few percent of the time in a lifetime, then it is almost impossible to restore your consciousness for a long period of time from a purely mundane perspective, as similar to the reasons that I explained earlier. And so this is not the way to, we'll say, pursue restoring your consciousness if you can identify in yourself that you've had a spiritual focus in this lifetime, or for sure if you know from a prior lifetime that that's been the case, even if you haven't exercised in this lifetime. Restoring consciousness by going to a 12-step program or 100 other methods that are in books and around there probably aren't going to work for you. They just won't work. 12-step programs are good because they bring some element of God into people's lives, but they don't work on helping people to become creative. And that's where the problem lies. They don't deal with that second part. They deal with love from a, we'll say, personal standpoint. And you can't, if you exercise love from a personal standpoint, the only kind of creation you can make is your lower self. The only thing you're going to create is a mundane sense of self with limited, if any, spiritual sense of self or higher self, which is a very important part of us. And therefore, at most, our conscience may develop, which is a small fraction of the higher self, but the rest of the higher self is left alone. And so real spiritual life is left out of those programs with a kind of mockery, I call it, or at least a sort of a shallow kind of spirituality, which is not real spiritual. It's just a fake one. But for some people, that's okay because they haven't reached that point where living a spiritual life is really has been ever important to them, so that they can get some help from those places. But most of those people aren't listening tonight to this show. And if they are, they're probably confused by it anyway. So it's not, I would love for everybody to listen, but I think that what I'm talking about tonight is for folks who want to live more spiritually. And that being the case, that other stuff out there, and there's lots of it, just isn't going to be much help. You probably already know that if you've lived long enough and you've had some problems in this area. So I hope tonight's going to really be some help to all of you that, and that's probably most of you, that have had issues about restoring consciousness. All right, so the first thing to be aware of is that every answer I'm going to give you from this point forward is going to be incorporated within spiritual service and the light of the soul. So this show is about folks who want to live a spiritual life, in other words. And if you really don't think that this is going to do anything for you because you don't want to live a spiritual life, then try Station 2. They're doing something over there. I don't know what they're doing, but it might be interesting to you. It's okay. And I'm not trying to force you not to listen to this, but I'm trying to say that it may not be relevant. And the other thing is that you read about or that you can contact people about to get some help might just work for you. That's fine. And I really encourage you to do those things if they seem to have been or if they will be of some service to your help. Okay, so everything's going to be about the light of the soul. It's going to be about doing some form of spiritual service, and we're going to start from some more basic models and work our way up from that point. First of all, a lot of this is age-related, and you should be aware that people who are working on restoring consciousness who are in their teenage years, way different than people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s. So you've got huge, vast gulfs of, we'll say, how to apply what and when and where to people because of just age factors. The biggest issue is how much bodies are developed, the senses in those bodies, and what kind of spiritual service can a person do at a certain particular age. And for that reason, I want to start with this very idea of, we'll call it, education. Most people, before they're 28 years of age, require additional education in order to restore consciousness. Now, why is that the case? Well, part of consciousness comes from the synthesis of information into knowledge that then is applied to our conscious self and hopefully our higher self so that we can use it to help others to be of greater service. That is then our service. And if you don't have enough knowledge, you won't be able to finish that whole scenario that I just explained. And most people under your age 28 do not have sufficient knowledge. The knowledge actually is kind of a wrong word, but I'm using it because most people relate to it so easily. I'm really talking about the beginning of wisdom. Now, here is the big issue. Wisdom is the knowledge which is whole enough, when applied through the light of the soul, inevitably becomes of some spiritual service to others. And wisdom always, when given, is of some service to others. So you can define it that way. Now, most people under 28 just don't have sufficient wisdom, and so in order to make up for it, they may need to increase their levels of knowledge, which becomes wisdom, through education, and then start, at whatever age they're at, applying it to others. The earlier you are in doing this, the faster your consciousness will restore, and the more you'll end up being wise at an earlier age. Now, why is that good? Well, hey, let's face it, wisdom is the ticket. If you can get to be wise, particularly before you're, say, 50 years old or so, you're doing pretty good. That's not a bad thing these days, and considering on the average of where folks are at. So it's not too bad to do that. what is the real or the most you want is if you're trying to really be lead a spiritual life, is by age 28, you want to be more wise than ignorant or in illusion. Now, how do you reach this point? You call it more, it would be 50%, right? 50.1%. How do you reach that? That means that the knowledge you have is more whole than not about all of the parts that you use of your knowledge to create some spiritual service for others. If you can do that by age 28, you have reached a remarkable goal. Because age 28 is considered spiritual adulthood, not 21. I know a lot of people think, oh, it must be 21. 21 is the adulthood of the lower self. Believe it or not, and it actually makes sense. It's, you know, 3 times 7. It's where the mental body becomes the dominant process of sense in that person. But in terms of applying that sense to gaining information so that we can use it, hopefully, for wisdom, it takes another 7 years. And so that's why you go from 21 to 28 and from a mundane lower self level to a higher self level. I hope you're following this because I said that rather quickly, but you can always be listening to it after tonight's show so you can hear it again. All right, so this is the bottom line then. We're really saying that age is fairly critical. I mean, let's say someone who's 14 years old. They're 14 years old, and they're just finishing the development of some of their astral senses. It's going to take them 7 years to use those astral senses in truly, we'll call it, more spiritual and correct ways. Some of the times, they're going to goof it up, right? But if that person can restore the consciousness they lose quickly from the mistakes that they made and develop wisdom from it, wisdom meaning that they can use it to help others to live better, right, to live more spiritually, to help others to become their souls, wow, then they are way ahead of the ball game. You can see how that works. And so the earlier a person can start doing this, the better. Education becomes critical, but what kind of education? I mean, you just go out there and kind of learn all of the a particular discipline or something, you know, like, well, I'll become educated as an engineer. I'll learn how to build a bridge. Or maybe I'll become educated as a mundane teacher. I'll learn how to teach children or this or that. Or maybe I'll become educated as a car mechanic. How about educated as a doctor, a healer? They're different. Okay, so what about those things? Well, that's the kind of education that builds the lower self, but it seldom is of service. And I picked doctor because many doctors are not really helping their patients become more, we'll say, helpful towards others. And many healers don't either, although more healers are of service to people than probably doctors are. But regardless, it's not as simple as what I'm saying. Education that involves the lower self is not the kind of education I'm talking about. All forms of education that are lower or, as I'm going to explain, higher, require for them to be in the light of the soul a quote-unquote higher kind of education, which I'll call the education coming directly from the soul rather than from a source in the world that is mundane surroundings. You're going to say, what did he just say? That sounds confusing. I don't understand. Who is teaching in the higher mental world? What is all this stuff? What are you talking about? Well, we all have a great teacher called the inner guide, or solar angel, or I don't care what you call it, it's like a great being, that is more composed of energy than of form, and that is an energy being, therefore, in some respects. We are more form beings, we have less energy and are more form, and that is part of our soul. sort of like the alter ego of herself, but is more advanced than herself. And this being waits for us to take mundane information and mundane knowledge and go to it and say, here I have this knowledge. Will you assist me in being creative with this knowledge so that I can apply it and help others to become more their self? And whenever you go with that question to this being, it comes to back with you with great new ideas for doing so. It just helps you see them. Now, how does it do that? It combines a bunch of concepts from the higher tiers of the mental world together and shoots them down to parts of your lower part of your higher mind and into your lower mind so you can create examples of them that will be of service to others. And it always picks the ones that you have the best chance of succeeding at and that will have the greatest service as is appropriate for those around you that need you. How does it do that? Because it has connection with their solar angels. And so you can help anyone other than those who are evil to do this because evil people have given up that connection. And it also increases your conscience so that you will be even more concerned about doing the right things in your service to others. And so we all got one of these. Wow. And all we've got to do is take the knowledge that we're gaining and go to this soul and say, here I am. I've got the knowledge. Will you help? And it responds almost instantly. Sometimes it responds in literally a form in which you hear its thoughts in your own head. Then you're not sure, did I think that or did someone else think that? Well, it's all the same thing now in this situation, but it may be that dramatic. Wow. Sometimes you can actually hear a verbalization, and it really may confuse you because these beings tend to speak in we's rather than me's because they're talking about themselves with other solar angels and souls together, our human souls. So it's like a collection of thought. But it doesn't matter. It's incredibly, you know, it's like, whoa. And you become instantly what I'll call a genius. The genius is in your ability to create in whatever the circumstances are required for the level of service that you need. You're never absent the needed service ability. You think it's impossible? What do you think I'm doing right now? Okay, so This is the point. Can you really do this? Yeah, you really can. Does it mean that you don't learn things then in the mundane world? No, I said you've got to take those things with the goal of being of spiritual service, and then the rest is help your help with. Some of you know what I'm saying is true because you already can do it sometimes. Others, depending upon age, others may not know. If you're below the age of 28, this may be confounding. Like, whoa, you can't do that. But if you're over that age especially, or if you're unusual and you've developed yourself beyond a certain point, you know what I'm saying is the truth. Because you can do it. Not always. When you do it, it's called uncontrolled intuition. Now, if you can do it at will, within a few seconds and do it for hours at a time, that's controlled intuition. They're both the same kind of thing. One is a sporadic at the moment, comes and goes, because you're not spiritually disciplined and it's advanced in your consciousness, but that's good. You're still getting somewhere. And then the other one is for those who have done more of the spiritual discipline, more advanced consciousness, and they can do it just, whoa. Okay, so that's where we need to get ourselves to. It is not impossible. And some level of education is needed for people under the age of 28. Now, what do you study? What do you learn about? Well, listening to the show. You are doing fine. If you listen to the show, that's education. If you read a lot of books that cover this subject, but many others, some that you would consider to be mundane, but you're applying them in a metaphysical, spiritual way because you want to create more of God, you'll get new, completely new thoughts and ideas, great wisdom by connecting to your inner guide, this great being, a being of light, and effectively your soul. Now, why isn't it just your soul? Well, because our souls are still quite young, and they are trapped in a very neural part of the mental world. So they can help us think to some extent, but not like their alter ego, the great angel, that assists us and assists it, the soul. So when I say the light of the soul, I mean the soul with a capital S. The capital S describes the solar angel, but it is inclusive of our soul, the human soul as well. Don't think that they are totally different. They are basically the same. Well, I want you to think about that while you do. I've got a couple announcements and whatever to mention here. First of all, I wanted to mention, I've been doing this metaphysical discussion group for a number of months now. We've doing it in a relatively new location over at the Pyle Adult Recreation Center. It's at 655 East Southern Avenue. Now, this is for folks who live either around the Phoenix area. If you don't, I encourage you to find out if there's another way maybe you can attend. We have right now one or two people that call in on occasion and participate by being literally on the phone. You can do that, yeah. So you have that as an option, always is the case. If you have a spiritual group and you would like me to sometimes assist in some areas of understanding, you can connect with me and I'll call into your group. I've done that for a lot in the past. And I'll help answer questions and get people through some difficult times and things. So you can do that anywhere. I don't care where you live. It doesn't matter because the phone lines will get there. And there's also computers and Skype and stuff. Some of that stuff is, it maybe will work. I don't know. We could try it. You know, we have like 1,000 lines for Skype for this show. And sometimes they work great. You know, sometimes they're all filled, but or whatever the story might be. But and sometimes they just don't work. You know, you get on and suddenly, boom, everybody's knocked off, whatever. And it's a free kind of service. I think the station pays something for it, but I don't know all the ins and outs. But the point is that for individuals, I know you can use it without a charge. Probably won't last very long that way, but it is right now that way here in the United States anyway. But remember, you're using something that is relatively new technology, and you're not, in most cases, paying for it, or not very much, if anything. And so it may be a little fragile, and sometimes it just doesn't work. Other times it's wonderful. I've heard that people say, wow, you can not only hear, but sometimes if you use it, you can see the other person as well, and that's a real nice thing. And yeah, we've been thinking about getting the camera in here. I've already done that years ago, but nowadays they can do a lot better. It used to be I looked like it was just sort of every few seconds I just jumped a little bit. My hands moved. To me, it was like a bunch of, you know, still pictures that somebody was just flipping through. Now I think there is real motion, and it might work. The question is about the technology and the cost and other things. So we'll check into that as well. But anyway, certainly we can use these technologies to help each other. And I'm certainly willing to be of help to anybody anywhere. So just think about that. If you want to be involved in this discussion group, you can do so. It's this coming Monday, August 13th, and it's from 7 to 8:30 p.m. That's Arizona time, which is the same at this time of year as Pacific time, Pacific Daylight Savings Time. we don't go on daylight savings, so it's kind of a weird thing. We're the same as the West Coast, even though amount of time. We just stay the same all year round. Most people in Phoenix do not want more sunlight later in the day. It's okay if the sun comes up early. They don't mind that. But that sun going down early, everybody is fine with. Today, I think, I don't know, it was 100 and some odd helpful, hellish degrees out there with huge humidity. It's a nasty time of year. We had a couple of really hot days. And, you know, it's part of living in Arizona. You kind of grin and bear it and say, well, in 2 months, it's going to be just beautiful here and people are going to have this or that kind of weather. All right, so at 655 East Southern Avenue, southwest corner of Rural and Southern, 7 to 8:30 p.m., mark your calendars, invite your friends. If you have questions, you want to know more about it, 480-966-3132. If nobody answers immediately, just leave a message. We'll get back with you, you know. Okay. And remember, this new location is quicker and easier in getting to the stores. We were like, first it was Borders, and then it was, whatever. We were at different stores going in doing these sort of things. The problem is in the store, you got so many interruptions and so much people walking by. It was difficult to keep, we'll say, a discussion going with the interference. Now we don't have that, and that's good news. So, all right, the Pyle Center, Pyle Adult Recreation Center. I just wanted to mention one last thing. If you haven't tried Dr. Stacy over at the Eye Center, give him a try. He and I are working out various schemes and ideas of how we can help people to see better. And mostly he's doing it, although I come up with some pretty strange ideas. It's 2974 North Alma School Road, Suite 3, over in Chandler, Arizona. Again, you need to live in the Phoenix area if you're going to go see him. And at the southwest corner of Alma School and Elliott, the Eye Center, Dr. David Stacy. All right, so back to restoring consciousness for this evening. And let's get back into the, we already know that it's important for some people to gain education, particularly if they're younger than 28 or so. If you have educated yourself, or if you have done a lot of spiritual service, education after 28 is sort of optional but helpful. It's always good to have, we'll say, more and better accurate, increasing accuracy in your knowledge. So don't shy away from it, but it may not be the absolute necessity that it would be for someone who's younger, because those people have to develop enough wisdom to really do what the kind of service we're talking about to restore consciousness. Now, as I said earlier, restoring consciousness is not easy. It's really a difficult process because the personality or subconscious part of ourselves is so adamant about wanting to be in control of everything and so fearful of this thing we call the soul and the light of the soul that it rebels. It just says, I don't want anything to do with that because I'm going to lose my lower self. And that makes it feel like it's going to be less of a person, like others are going to be in control of it instead of it in control of its own life. And it fights and screams and does other things, right? Sometimes it deliberately chooses to lower consciousness to deal with the suffering and or the spiritual discipline it does not want to employ in its life. It will sabotage as much as it will give in. All right. What's the next step? Well, for most of people, the next step is these days to not work completely alone. Individuality is key to developing us, each of us. However, it has become equally necessary to work in group consciousness or soul consciousness with others. Because in order to be of service, it is so complex and so difficult. Most forms of spiritual service require more than one person involved because we don't have sufficient wisdom as on an individual basis. This is very true of people over the age of 28. Not as much for people under the age of 28. They're still developing individuality, and even if they don't do this as much with others, they can get by because the levels of spiritual service they're doing are minimal in comparison to the more developed, we'll call it spiritual adult. And in addition, they, in a number of circumstances, can look for the simpler solutions that may deal with people of similar ages to themselves. It's very difficult for someone who's, say, 19 years old to go out and spiritually serve somebody who's 38. Why is that? Because the person who's 38 needs things the person who's 19 is unable to understand at that age. And so that level of spiritual service will work if that person who's 19 enters the spiritual group type of thing, and they are working in that spiritual group, they can possibly be of service to many people way over 38. But only in that perspective could they do that. Alone, they'd be stuck dealing with people more their own age. And so you can see why this becomes an issue. Once you reach beyond the age of 28, you almost always need some spiritual group work to deal with the more complex problems that these people assume. These people are dealing oftentimes with systems and groups of others who may not recognize themselves as anything other than that they work or act as a group. It could be a national issue, too. There are all kinds of ways of spiritual serving, and they become more complicated as we both grow older and live in more complex societies. If you live in a very simple society, group service may not be required as those who live in more complex ones. Just as a few hundred years ago, it was less necessary than it is today. All right. And initiation into the next kingdom used to be accomplished, for the most part, on an individual basis. After about 1925, that changed to become requiring a group consciousness along with individual consciousness to be equal to each other in the person who's initiating the change to becoming something more than human, and therefore they couldn't do it alone. It required their participation. Nowadays, people can't really take physical initiation because you would have to do it among a group of people, and so far, most, if not all, groups of spiritual people can't seem to get their act together so that they accomplish the necessary development in consciousness on a unified basis to take physical world initiation, as it was possible to do before 1925 on an individual basis. So it's done in the mental world at this time. There's disadvantages to that, to say the least. And the greatest disadvantage is that you don't have the whole group expanding its consciousness at one time, and a lot of other issues. And it's very difficult to do while you're physically alive. So a lot of people delay the whole event until the astral or mental world life. That really causes a lot of cramping in the whole system. And we can't solve it until there are better, we'll say, spiritual groups where people are functioning together more on, we'll say, a cohesive soul level. And this is difficult. In the world of teaching, in the second level, the second type of energies that are used, the second ray energies that are used in spiritual groups, they're called second ray groups, it is very difficult to find one of those groups that are doing much of anything other than pontificating about historical texts and other stuff from 50 to 100 years ago. They reject anything like stuff that I write. They almost always reject it because, well, that person, me, can't be right because he didn't write this 75 years ago. I people were really knowing what they were doing. Of course, that's one way to look at it. But there are other things. There are things that get involved in this. So, in reality, it's hard to, we'll say, see the light of the soul if the light of the soul has egotism and arrogance and a sensible quote of self-importance in front of one's knowledge. That kind of obstruction prevents people from forming a true spiritual group. They get together, they do their, you know, moon meditations, and they follow this holiday or that spiritual event, and they read this book or that article or whatever, and they may even communicate together about some subject on the internet, but the problem is that they're not together to spiritually serve. As a matter of fact, I've met more of them that actually, in an honest way, say, well, my life is not about spiritual service. My life is about educating myself so that when I get to the astral world, I'll spiritually serve them. Of course, the problem is, like I started at the beginning of the show, those folks are really an illusion, because the spiritual service that is needed the absolute most is in the physical world. This is where the dark side is trying to widen the door and trying to destroy the world. And if you ignore it, say bye-bye to Earth. The astral world is not going to support Earth. It's the physical world that is the foundation. So, you know, you can't say, well, I'll go on and I'll be really good once I'm in the mental world. I'll monkey around a little bit in the astral world. I'll be a little more spiritually disciplined. But, you know, I mean, I'm not a bad person. I say my daily prayers, meditations, I talk about these spiritual subjects. I really learned about some different kinds of ways of thinking about this subject of angels' wisdom or spiritual thought or whatever. Yeah, that's clearly the way to lose consciousness and to not be on the path of spiritual development. It's a problem, and for people who are studying this very subject, it's actually more difficult for them than someone who's in a totally different ray focus, such as someone into, we'll say, the fourth ray of creating some kind of communication through producing beauty in the world in a more artistic fashion. Those folks may actually do more spiritual service than the folks who supposedly the ones who have the knowledge. They know so much. Okay. How do we deal with that question? How are we going to get people to function in any kind of spiritual group? The first answer is to be humble. Humility is the number one way to find the light of the soul. If you are not humble, almost everything I say tonight will fail. Know a soul by its humility. Have you ever heard that? It's a phrase from the Bhagavad Gita. But it's a great phrase. It's a great statement. Krishna tells Arjuna, you know a soul by its humility. So a soul can be recognized by how humble it is. The light of the soul is the act of humility. What is humility? Humility is the admission with complete non-reservation of one's illusions, ignorance, failures, and seeking to be of greater service to others. Spiritual service. That's humility. And how do you get it? Well, wisdom helps, because as you get wiser, you start start realizing all the goofy things you've done in the past and start realizing, oh, man, I can't trust what I think or say because look at what I've done, you know. And most importantly, humility is the recognition of God. Why? Because God is a being in proportion to us of such light and such greatness, of such humility. I will explain how God can be humble, but we'll get to that. Of such humility that it humbles us as soon as we have a glimpse of God. You could say the same about the soul, because the soul is a much lower level position of God. But still, either could be, because humans are so low in this equation, that we could say the same about the soul. How in the heck is God humble? How is God, where is the humility of God? What is that? In order for there to be life, which is God's growth, which is why life is, by the way. In order for there to be life, God had to take its own beingness and say, this beingness, this life of all that I am, needs to become the life that is free to co-create or not itself with and without others as it chooses to be all that it can be in place of all that I am. God does not diminish itself through that process. God allows there to be infinite growth in both itself and everything else. But it gives up its absolute nature of being all-knowing, all-powerful, and, amazingly, all-present in a single, universal, non-humble, non-anything other than itself way. So God said, I don't want to just be me, because being me can get kind of boring, because then I am everything that there is, and that's what's as good as that. So for me to grow, I need to give freedom to something else, I'll call it life, so it can have its own existence and can experience what it's like to be me, if it chooses to be, or like not to be me, if it chooses that as well, or to want to destroy me if it chooses to do that, any choice it chooses it can, and I do so in complete humility before this life, allowing it to diminish all elements of my existence, if that is what it so chooses, because the life that I create, I love more, far more, than I love myself. As a matter of fact, the life that I create, I infinitely love. And the life that I have been before I make this choice, I only love in that it can give this new thing of I call life all that I have and will give, which is everything. That level of humility is so great that it is beyond the comprehension of human beings to grasp it. So everything I just said, you're going, huh? Right. Because you really didn't understand it. That's right. Because I don't understand it. So if you do understand it, then you are well beyond me. Because it has a great paradox in it. That paradox is the key to understanding why life is. The key. But you can't gain You can't broach, you can't get through that paradox until you get through being a human being. If you're human, I know you don't understand it. And if you're beyond human, you're beginning to understand it, but only some very, very beyond human beings who have attained almost the humility of God really get it. So humility becomes the great engine of the light of the soul. Getting closer to God's humility, which is still extremely far away from this great being, leads us closer to the light of the soul. And the soul helps us to do this. As we become more humble, the soul and we become more one. Our personality joins with our soul. Our lower self joins with our higher self. And all become a greater part of God. Wow. Why is there a paradox? Because the mystery needs to be there, because it leads to creation. If there were no mystery, if there truly were no paradox, if there was some way that I could magically, poof, get rid of that for you, I would be doing a terrible thing. Because it is the very mystery that leads all of us to create in infinite ways, in infinite amounts, eventually, and produces the great universes that we exist within, the amazing things. That's not to say we have to be ignorant in the mystery. It just means that the mystery is the fuel that gets the creation going. Now, some people come across this, we'll call it, enigma during the time I talked about of their spiritual development, during what I call the accepting of the soul part of an initiation, particularly during the second initiation. And they have a great, we'll call it, problem. That may be a catharsis at some point, but in the beginning it's a problem. And the problem is, well, if I can't understand the mystery of this paradox of God, then how in the heck can I go on with this? Because in order for me to go on, I have to know everything there is to understand. I have to have consciousness beyond belief, and I just don't have it. So therefore, I quit. Taking my marbles, going home, instead of co-creating more of God, I'll go fly a kite. Or maybe I'll get myself a nice motorbike. Maybe I'll have an interesting sexual encounter. How about a romantic relationship? Anyway, goes on that. The point here is it is in the unsettled nature of being a human being that we lose our humility in believing that we can have this level of understanding of our Creator at such an early stage, relatively early stage, of the development of life within us. Human beings are the very first parts of life that can even recognize and then understand God at all, any part of it. And from this point, it takes an enormous amount of development to get to those paradoxical issues, to understand that the Creator created the ultimate, we'll call it, creation, which substitutes its existence for the existence of everything else. But it remains as a being. It remains in consciousness. It does not dissolve. It isn't a deistic, that's a word being like mechanical model, where there's no more God. God created the universe but then left. That's not what happens. God experiences the universe as all of its parts of itself, which is life, grow and recognize it eventually, it experiences great levels of bliss and beyond. But it does so from a perspective of complete freedom from its own, what we call it, ego, and chooses to not control, which is the opposite of our personality. Our personality isn't anti-God, except when it becomes evil, but it is sort of the obstruction to gaining enough understanding of God to restore consciousness. That's where our problem lies. So that's what I said earlier in the show. So we've got to get past the first and most important step on the spiritual path is to recognize that humility is the ingredient, the magic ingredient that leads to the light of the soul. Humility. Humans have a capacity in single-digit percentiles for developing humility in comparison to beings that are close to being God. We are very far from being humble, no matter how much at all. Well, what about those third and fourth level initiates? Well, yeah, they are still in single digits in their humility in comparison. Remember I mentioned Milarepa? Milarepa was probably, at the end of that particular lifetime, he may have hit a 5 or 6% level of humility. What? 5 or 6? The guy was supposed to be an arhat of his day. How is that possible? I thought arhats are supposed to be the most humble of beings. Yeah. Well, let me tell you a little story. Most of you, a lot of you may have heard this about Benjamin Franklin. He had a list of 20 things that he wanted to accomplish in his spiritual development. This is a true story now. And, he wrote about it. He tried to work on it. The list went off from all the things we talk about on this show. There are great things to consider. But the last thing on his list was pride. Not to say it's the most important thing, by the way, but it was the last thing. And he would get through all 19 on a good day, or maybe a good week, of these, we'll call it virtues, that he wanted to develop within himself in his dealing mostly with others. And the bottom line was that by the time he got to number 20, he was so pleased with himself, thinking that he had done such a great job in doing something that few human beings could do. He was proud. And then he realized what he had done is he substituted the enormity of self-focus from the 19 things into being so self-focused about being this great being, great, in the sense that he made it through the 19, and we could call him an arhat, maybe. He wasn't quite at that level, but he was an advanced initiate now, and he still screwed up. Yeah. Even some of this was, you've heard about sexual exploits. Even some of this was about becoming a pure sexual being himself. He even accomplished that, but he still became proud of the fact that he had done these things. And by the time he got over the pride, he found he had failed, which was starting to fail, or already failed, in many of the 19 things all over again. He couldn't quite ever finish the list. Why is pride such a big deal? Because we have a lower self, even though it fuses with our higher self, we have a lower self who is part of the mix in our consciousness. Now, you start giving up this lower self as you go beyond human. But human beings can't give up their lower self. We don't have a mechanism to do this until at what is known the great release in the fourth, today, the fourth initiation for Arhats. They can do it because they do something that God initially did, which is they give up their life for those that they teach, well, for those that they save and then teach. They give their life up for them, just as God gives up its life for the sake of others to create and grow. And so that's what they have to do. And they do that, and it's just for a few. It's not like for planets, infinite, who knows, number of planets with trillions and trillions of humans and many others on it. That's what God created. I mean, beyond, way beyond that, right? So at a very minuscule scale, just to get to the next kingdom requires this. And when you do, at that point, you really do start giving up the lower self. How do you do it? Well, your consciousness moves from one of wisdom, which is very important. We talked about that. It moves from that level to the level of omniscience. What's the difference? Well, wisdom is a mental factor. It's the ability for us to conceptualize and instantly create examples, concrete examples in the mental part of us. The examples are logical. The concepts provide truth. When we put those together and they fit together in a way so they don't contradict each other, we start becoming wise. Okay, that's cool. But that's extremely low levels of thought in comparison to what beings beyond human think. Beings beyond humans, they don't do that stuff. They think in a thing called omniscience, which means all-knowingness. They don't have to try to bring information together, to create knowledge, and then take the knowledge and apply it to various things using consciousness to create wisdom. It just doesn't, it's not necessary. They instantly are able to do that just as a sense. So omniscience becomes the completed sense of the next realm, which is called the intuitional or Buddhic plane. And once you have omniscience, you are starting to think more, much more, in the as a higher self, which is the lowest part of what we might call a godly kind of self. But it's very, very strange because that self has three different levels. The first level is omniscience. The second level is omniscience joined with omnipotence, or power, applied to use the omniscience in ways that does not disturb others' freedoms, but that helps them to grow. And then finally, the last thing is all presence. You experience all that is while you're in an all-powerful way, helping everything to become more creative by not interfering with its creation, but by helping it to be more creative in an infinite variety of ways. It's a hard thing for us to imagine because it's a very godlike thing, but it is truly like God. And omniscience is the first step. That's all, just a step. All right, so once you get this omniscience, which, by the way, again, is another word for it, is the actualization of controlled intuition. Remember I talked about controlled intuition earlier in tonight's show? Well, this is the actualization of it. All right, once you're able to do that, you start making other people's senses instantly beautiful, which means that they are perfected in the image of God's thought for that level of body at that particular time. This is a really great thing. It's all about God, though. You notice that? And the light of the soul becomes this really brilliant kind of light. The lower self is actually, and this sounds a little hard to understand, is converted into the higher self. No consciousness is lost. But what is lost is the need to be separate in order to be special. The need to be separate in order to be special is a condition of wisdom without omniscience. When you replace wisdom with omniscience, the need to be separate is no longer part of the person, because they find a new way, a whole new way, many new ways of being co-creator with God that doesn't confine them to such a selfish viewpoint. Their humility grows enormously, closer to God's. And some of what I'm saying is really out there. And I don't mind the fact that I'm probably losing some of you. Like, you're going, what in the heck is he talking about? It's so far away, I can't understand. Well, we're talking about restoring consciousness, and I'm trying to explain the very outside limits of where some of you may be at. I'm not trying to say that everybody's going to have, like, oh, an aha experience. I just need to do that. I'm fine. But I'm trying to have something that you all can look forward to. I'm not trying to make it feel bad or like, oh, yeah, he knows what he's talking about, but I don't care. I don't know anything about it. Now, the point is that this is something to look forward to. We can get there. I'll get back to the more pragmatic things. We still got a little bit of time left. Don't worry. All right. So here is where God enters into the picture for us. We know that we have a lower self. We know that that lower self, no matter what we try to do as human beings, we're going to still have the illusion of separateness as being a necessity for us experiencing the specialness of ourselves. And to God, the opposite is true. Being one with all, omnipresent, that's way above the omniscience, is second nature to those beings that are much closer to God. We're very far from that. Human beings can't get there as long as they have separated lower selves. But we can, at least in an intellectual way, gain a little bit of a picture, a little bit of a vision of where we can get to, and an appreciation for those ahead of us who may have already gotten there. Again, more humility is the answer, and that's a great answer. All right, let's talk about some other practical things. What about relationships here in the physical world? How do we overcome the loss of consciousness that we experience in various forms of relationships? Well, some of the things that we have that are consistent with many people's, let's say, experiences in life is that we have trouble finding what we consider to be sexually involved relationships with mates or people that we are going to be, hopefully in a monogamous way, committed to and exchange sexual energy with. Now, you know, some of you know that I've written this, although I'm not the first writer to say this, but homosexuals have a problem because they can't love each other during the sexual act. They can love each other as much as they want in every other means, but during the sexual act, because of the way the energies travel back and forth between themselves, they can't experience the other person as a different kind of sex from themselves, which requires the act of love to change the energy back and forth between each other if they're heterosexual. But in homosexuals, they don't experience that because they're not doing that. And so they lose that option. So it has an effect on them, and so that's a problem for them. They can try to resolve it by being more loving in other ways, but this is a special way that it's very difficult to give up and not to have it distort or change your opportunity to raise your consciousness. It will, in most cases, lower consciousness. That aside, in heterosexual exchanges of sexual energy, you don't raise your consciousness unless you are able to change the sexual energy that you're giving to be in the same intensity and phase or relationship to the consciousness of the other person in their needs. If you can do that, and you do that correctly, it's very difficult. you gain a tremendous increase in consciousness. But the other person is also involved in it. So you can't do it singly. It takes both people to do this. And that is no easy task. It's hard enough for one to do it. They both have to be doing it at the same time. What can you do about it? Well, first of all, you need to develop a relationship that, in the non-sexual sense, you're doing this as much as possible, and the sex should come secondary. So maybe you don't even have sex for a while, or you have it infrequently, until you are able to model your relationship to when it's non-sexual and so much easier to do that you can do it. Then apply it in a sexual fashion, and the results can be pretty profound. You can restore consciousness this way. It's called tantric sexual practice. There are books on it. But more importantly, you need to understand the behind the metaphysics parts of it. And read chapter 7 in Life and Meaning. That may help you. The point that I'm trying to make is you can restore consciousness from this. You need to have the appropriately developed bodies. You can't do it if you're 10 years old, because your sexual body your astral body isn't developed enough to support the exchange of sexual energy properly. As a matter of fact, you may not be able to do it until you're 28. So that's a whole other factor. Now, should people abstain or whatever? That's a whole different issue. I'm just talking about using sexuality to restore consciousness. You can do it, but in a very difficult way. And the tantric sexual issue isn't going to some quote-unquote yogi who is doing it in Tucson or Los Angeles and claims that he can get everybody to establish a tantric relationship by just following his 10 easy steps while you pay him $500. No, it is much more complicated than that, and it requires a very long-term kind of interaction. As a matter of fact, most of those groups who practices are the opposite. The people don't even know each other. If they go together at all, they barely know each other, and usually they go and they don't know anybody there, and they get together, oh, let's have tantric sex. If it's white sex, they don't actually complete the physical act. If it's red tantric sex, they do. It doesn't matter. Neither one is going to achieve a true tantric state. They have no connection. They can't change the phase energy of the intensity of the sexual energy they're giving to meet the needs of the other person and match their bodies. Because the whole purpose of this is to be the other person in their energy state. You get to experience them. Eventually, you get to read their minds, feel their feelings while you're having the sexual experience. How important is that? Well, that's a pretty big thing. Because that's a little piece of God, isn't it? That's like the omnipresent instant state for a few seconds or minutes with at least one other person. It's not the whole universe, but you've got to start somewhere. And that's why God created sex for human beings. But many other reasons that people use sex and have sex, including procreation. All right, so restoring consciousness can be used in that way. It's much more complicated. And if you're in a committed relationship, I suggest you work on this. Read about it. See, it may take you years, decades, to get to this point. It's not easy. Read Afterlife Love. The characters in that particular book actually do achieve it. And you'll read how they did it, what they did. But it's no simple thing. But yes, it can restore consciousness. It can help each other grow consciousness. And it helps you to, for the first time, be outside of your lower self. You get to experience the self of the other person, both our higher and lower self at the same time, while you're having true tantric sex. So that's a worthwhile suggestion. I hope that you'll consider that. Let me give you some more ideas, some more possible ways to restore consciousness. Spiritual discipline includes many elements that act on the senses, which then helps to restore consciousness. The proper foods that you could eat, which has to do with both nutrition and certain elements. Some things are really just bad for you. If you eat a lot of sugar, that's not good. If you're going to eat tremendous amounts of anything that is, by our standards today, fairly harmful to the physical body, you better believe it's not going to be good for me. Generally speaking, eating any source of meat that had consciousness in it before it was prepared to be eaten is going to reduce your own consciousness to some level. If you want to restore consciousness, a vegetarian diet of some sort is good. You don't have to be a vegan. Just make sure there was no consciousness or as little as possible within the food you're eating. And that's a good thing. Why do you not want to eat the consciousness of something else? Because that consciousness interferes with your consciousness if it's a lower form of life. Also, it destroys the conscious beingness of other life to kill it for the purpose of eating it. So it kind of diminishes its level of existence, and you're negating your contact with their soul in God. But if you really like hamburgers or whatever you want to eat, then recognize that that food will diminish to some extent your consciousness. And there's going to be very little you can do to negate that specific effect from that specific exercise. Although cigarette smoking is far worse, and so is the use of most drugs. So ultimately, you have to look at your whole life in terms of the physical disciplines of correcting those things so that you can restore your consciousness. What about astral factors? Reducing glamours or fixed desires is very important. How do you reduce them? Well, you have thousands of them. So what you do is you look for those things that you feel compelled to do it in an emotional sense. Because of your feelings, you do things. Best thing is not to do things for any feeling you have, but only for the feeling of wanting to give others a chance and help them to do so of spiritual service. If that's the feeling you have about everything that you do, you have no problems with your astral body. Most people have lots of problems with their astral body because that's not how they feel. They feel the exact opposite. I want this, I want that, I want to feel this way or that way. And mentally, you need to be creating as much truth as possible. If your desire is to create what others will do for you in the mental sense and to convince them that you in some way are superior or ego better in some way, then you're not going to restore consciousness. But you will restore consciousness if you seek truth, even at the cost of your own opinions, your own image to others. If that's what you seek, I want the truth for all, no matter how it diminishes my lower self, then you're on the right track. Restoring consciousness from a mental position is particularly hard. It's actually more hard, more difficult, than the astral one about feeling. But most people don't know that because they don't live their life enough that way. So if you can, the restoring of truth certainly restores consciousness. Truth is not something you can tell somebody. Truth is something you create in their mind. You may have to lie your butt off trying to say things to them so they will create truth for themselves. So it isn't about, you can never tell people the truth. You can only help them to understand and eventually develop it in your own minds. And most of the time, you're going to be restricted from what you can say, which you believe to be the truth, but they can't hear it and come to the same understanding of truth that you have. And remember, you're going to help them to develop in themselves, not something you're going to stamp on them. We're running out of time, and there's a lot more to talk about, but yet restoring consciousness from the light of the soul, I hope, as you can see it from this perspective, is a lot more than what we started from today's show. Okay, well, we're out of time for now. And until next time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.